Higher Human Performance, the podcast, episode 286. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance, the podcast. Brought to you by Bula, B-U-L-A Network, LLC, my company, an executive and leadership coaching company. Find out more about it over at the website, higherhumanperformance.com. Today, it's about leadership, as always. Think, but don't overthink. Data. It's the business strategy roadmap for every organization. Yes, every organization. What's your business? Who are you serving? How are you serving them? What do they want? How and when do they want it? Today's high-performing organizations aren't merely reviewing past performance. They are focused, intently focused, on being able to predict their own future. Maybe better said, they are devoted to making their future come true based on data, based on evidence. Evidence-based leadership was a topic of a few episodes ago. You can go back and look for that. But that was really just a high-level view of evidence-based leadership. It didn't really even mention the big elephant in the room, and the big elephant in the room is the major obstacle for many leaders to follow evidence. Why don't more leaders follow evidence? Desire? I mean, many just don't want to see, they don't want to know the evidence. It's just so easy for us to just have these knee-jerk reactions, have these emotional responses. Have these inclinations, these intuitions, these gut feels, you know, the seat of the pants kind of stuff that many people, including CEOs, can often trust more than they trust the evidence. Many of us, we want to make decisions based on our preferences, based on our experiences, our gut feel. And that's why far too many CEOs and top leaders, they relish their authority. They want to use that power to make the decision. And maybe they want to prove how smart they are. Maybe they feel it's why they're in that top seat. It's bullheaded, though. And frankly, in today's world, with the fast pace that we are all having to endure, it's rather foolish. The best organizations on the planet don't run that way, and their CEOs are among the most powerful people on the planet. You don't believe me? Just take a look at Amazon, Netflix, Google. Being data-driven about our own leadership. The point of today's show is that to be fast in gathering and dissecting information and data, but we also have to be fast to take proper action. I mean, it's one thing to think. It's one thing to collect data and to analyze it and scrutinize it. Something else. It's something else to overthink it. That is to just keep gathering data in hopes that, well, we can fill every empty gap that might exist in our knowledge of the market or our problem or our customers or our business. That's part of it. Just the ongoing data gathering, the ongoing preparation. But, you know, before we can really dive into data, we probably need to look inside ourselves as leaders. And there are three perspectives crucial to every leader. I talked about this back over in episode 284. I pose them as questions. How do you see yourself? How do others see you? How do you want to be seen? I have found that even the most outwardly confident leaders, sometimes they struggle. They struggle with a loss of confidence. Seems odd, I know. Nobody seems immune from the head trash that would rob us of our confidence. Some people just handle it more proficiently than others. But we all have to wrestle with it. I've not met anybody yet who doesn't have to wrestle with it. Being data-driven may not really be so disconnected from these three questions. How do you see yourself? How do others see you? How do you want to be seen? You see yourself the way you see yourself for a reason. Or reasons, And they may range from very credible things to very incredible things. I've sat across business owners or C-level execs who openly confessed to me how they felt. They felt like, you know, I could just be found out at any moment. I mean, people will find out, man, I'm not as good as people may think I am. And they felt as though they were kind of fooling the universe. But there really wasn't any evidence to verify that this head trash that they had, that it was steeped in any kind of reality. It was just, they just felt that way. It's that old imposter kind of a syndrome. You know, real quick to ascribe their success to timing or luck or both. And they sometimes feel as though they're actors. They're just actors in this grand play that is their life. They're wrong, of course. Now, I've seen people on the other end of the spectrum who had just a very different idea of their, you know, their own worth, insisting that, you know, it was their brilliance all along that got them where they got. The primary reason for their success is because they are the smartest person in the room. Well, they don't see themselves like those earlier folks. I mean, there's two completely different viewpoints, two different perspectives of people who see themselves very differently. But there's a reason why they see themselves the way they do. And whether you see yourself as being all that in a bag of chips or you see yourself as being a complete fraud, well, it matters. It matters. My advice is to understand that you may not be as good as you think you are, but you're probably not as bad as you feel you are either. Because we're all complex. Our paths are dotted with tons of failures, tons of successes, and a lot of stuff that falls in between those two. Our accomplishments are rarely due solely to our own work. Most, if not all of us, owe somebody for lending us a hand along the way. Maybe it was an introduction that just came at this perfect, ideal time. Maybe it was an opportunity that arrived when we just needed it the most. Me, I have a list of people. I have a list of people in my wake, and the list gets longer all the time, who have helped me along the way. I wouldn't be where I am today without the help and the support of many, many people. You are not listening to the voice of a self-made man. And good thing, too, because I know I'm not that good. I also know I'm not that bad. Good things happen to bad people, and bad things happen to good people. So I would encourage you to get over yourself. If you feel that you alone are responsible for your position of leadership. And I would encourage you to stop feeling like a fraud if you feel like you're unworthy of the position. Instead, today, I could likely argue that we're all probably exactly where we belong, you know? I mean, we are where we are as leaders because of the sum total of our decisions, our choices, and our actions and our behaviors. We acted based on those choices, and here we are. Here we are, maybe exactly where we belong. Now, the question changes, what are we going to do with the leadership we've got? Examine the data that puts you where you are. Think about the people who have served you. Are you devoted to be that somebody for others, or are you mostly interested in protecting yourself? Now, I'm going to come around, you know I always do, I'm going to come around full circle to this whole notion of overthinking. But all these things are a preface, and they're really important to this conversation. Great leaders don't spend their days protecting themselves. No, they take the bullets so others don't have to. It's in the DNA of the greatest leaders to serve, serve, serve. They know that's the road to having the biggest impact on the largest number of people. And if there's one thing that every great leader has in common, it's this: to make a difference. To make a difference. You have to believe in your ability to make a positive difference. You have to know in your gut that if you weren't the leader, the organization would suffer. Not because of anything specific, perhaps, that you do. It's not about your specific work product necessarily. Could be. But it's mostly because of the difference that you make in the lives of the people you lead. Without you serving them, running interference for them, helping knock down their constraints, these people would certainly suffer greater hardships in the organization. You make their lives better by helping them achieve higher human performance. Okay, is this really data-driven or is this touchy-feely? I would argue it's both. You feel the way you feel. Okay, well, that's based on something. Data enters into it somewhere. It doesn't have to be accurate data. You know, the anorexic person feels and thinks they look fat. They look in the mirror and they see something very different than what you and I see, or than even what the photograph or the film would reveal. They see something very different. They're wrong, but unless they have some kind of help, you're not going to convince them that they're wrong. Yes, they have a disorder, but you know what? Many leaders have disorders too. In both cases, the challenge is the same, to get people to see themselves as they really are, warts and all. That's the thinking part of this whole deal. And as leaders, we've got to get it right. I talked in a previous episode about a leadership reality check. How do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as you really are? Some people encourage you to ask other people, you know, how they see you in order to figure this out. You know, but that won't always work. I mean, it'll just tell you how they feel about you. Now, you got to come to grips with how you see yourself. And again, that was largely the topic back in episode 284 about having a leadership reality check. Now, I'd like to encourage you to figure out how important you think it is for you to have all the answers. Because that's at the heart of this. That's at the heart of overthinking it. And sometimes executives feel that they're in the position that they're in because, well, they have to have the answer. I got to be the answer man. I got to be the answer woman, because everybody that walks through that door, they're looking at me and they're expecting me to have the answer. And after all, I'm sitting in this executive suite. I'm sitting in this chair because I historically have been the person who had the answer, or I even had the best answer. It's a pitfall that I would encourage you to avoid. And besides, it's lonely. It's very, very lonely. And it's less effective than including others and keeping things as simple as possible. True story. Pardon the self-illustration. But some years ago, when I was really steeped in roll up your sleeves, get your hands dirty kind of consulting, I was this guy, right? So when that's your role, people are paying you money to bring them answers. You are paid to solve the problem, and it can really fuel something terribly negative. It can fuel this inflated sense of self, which frankly, I don't know that I've ever really suffered that. I'm very self-deprecating, and that's intentional, and it's also natural. But as I was in that role, give or take 2.5 years or so ago, I began to morph my own professional life, very intentionally, I might add, into more of a coaching or advising role, where I really was seeking to help people figure out the answers for themselves. I was far more interested, and I felt like my contribution to their personal growth would best be benefited by me just asking them great questions, me helping them find some clarity. Now, I happen to be naturally prone to, the subject of today's show is, I can just tell you, is not terribly hard for me, overthinking it. And I could be clever and self-deprecating, and I will be by telling you, probably because I just don't have the capacity to overthink it. It's people, but it's also processes. So I want to focus on the two main components of overthinking. First, the people part. I spent time on this in the last episode about collaboration. But for today, overthinking often happens when people lose sight of the objective to solve a problem, create improvement, accomplish some of the business objective, whatever it may be. It's especially tempting for very smart, well-educated people to want to outshine others in the room. You know, leaders can sometimes be jealous of the good ideas of their team. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen a leader who took credit for things? Yeah, of course. It happens all the time. right? The leader swoops in, takes credit for an idea that some lower level person thought up, and the lower level, the underlings, sense this, find out about it. People are hacked off. Egos can drive down productivity, and they can wreck team chemistry. It happens all the time, every day. Avoid it. Avoid it. You know, the room isn't for people to let their talent shine. It's not a room to let people's intellect shine or let people's vocabulary shine. I was in a meeting not long ago, and it was just a barrage of buzzwords. Are you like me? You get really sick and tired of all of the business mumbo jumbo buzzwords. I mean, it was at some point I felt like, you know, I need a glossary. There needs to be a glossary that I can pull up on my phone. Now I realize every business has their own vocabulary. You know, we have these, acronyms, and we have these buzz phrases that seem to be kind of industry or even business or organization specific, but man alive. And the writing of books, the publishing of books is doing nothing but making it worse. Now, the room's not for that. Well, it shouldn't be for that. I'm lurking on Blab, a Blab session the other day. I haven't spent much time over there lately, and for good reason. It was late one night, and I was up checking the inbox, and I was looking to see if there was anything interesting to listen to as I sorted through my inbox. And this, I only did this for about 15 minutes. And the Blab session was a four-way conversation, the maximum that you can have, with some leadership coaches. The conversation wasn't indicative of a room of executives trying to solve a problem, but it did remind me. It reminded me of some behaviors that I've seen in such rooms. Now, this room was virtual, but it didn't matter. These people could have all been face-to-face, and it would have been the same thing. I mean, each coach in this Blab session, four of them, they were trying to outwit the others. And again, I mean, I was in this thing for no more than 15 minutes. And in that 15-minute period, it just seemed to me to be an exhibition of a game of one-upsmanship with every participant working really hard to show up the others. Well, you know, that same agenda often enters the conference room where physically we are together, and we are as a group, we are tasked with finding a good solution, finding the best solution, coming up with some idea. A great leader manages the meeting so it doesn't devolve into a game where overthinking is highly regarded. No, instead, the objective should always be to provide the best solution possible. And I would encourage you, don't ever ridicule simple or those who suggest simple. Uh-uh. Take the work seriously. Take yourself much less so. And herein lies the problem. People taking themselves too seriously and thinking that the goal is all about showing off. Not necessarily in some big bravado way, but in a way where people think that they're smart, and we want to make sure the room knows we're smart. I've sat in far too many conference rooms observing and participating in problem-solving sessions where the issue quickly gets clouded with misdirections that are caused by people that seem to be more anxious to garner the praise of others than to come up with a straightforward suggestion or question. I mean, how many meetings have you been in where simply staying on point seemed nearly impossible? Does that ring any bell with you? Of course it does. It does with all of us. I mean, why is that so hard? I can tell you why it's hard, because people are coming with a hidden agenda to look good, sound smart, appear smart, instead of being effective. All the while forgetting that they're one and the same. If you're good, you're effective. If you're smart, you're effective. It's not about, can I use words that nobody in this room but me understand? You know, sometimes the smarter the room, the more difficult it can be to recognize the simple solutions or the simple ideas. Smart people. I'm not talking about fake smart. I'm talking about really, really smart people, truly smart people. they can feel the need to be smart, to act smart, to sound smart. And it means that they often will seek out sophistication, right? I'm smarter than most of the people here in this room. So my answer, my suggestion, my ideas, they need to show the level of sophistication that I really employ in my life. But it foils success when we overcomplicate things. Everybody thinks muddy water is deep is a statement that an old preacher friend of mine used to make. Whenever people would hear somebody speak, had no idea what the people were saying. And that was the old preacher's retort to me. Well, yeah, of course. Everybody thinks muddy water's deep. He was right. He was right. I'd like to have a dollar for every time I've heard somebody make a comment coming out of a meeting. Man, she's smart or he's smart. Have no idea what they were talking about, but boy, they're smart. Or, boy, those people, man, that group over there, they are really, really smart. Why? Well, I mean, why do you? Well, they're smarter than me, man. I got no idea what they were even talking about. True story. I'm sitting in a room with about 20 or so people, and there's somebody in the room, and they're holding forth, and they're talking about their project, and they're talking about all the steps that they're taking to prepare the launch of this thing. And the guy's going on and on about the various smart moves that he's making, right? It is evident that he is pretty pleased with how strategic he's being. And so he starts talking about all the various metrics that he's using to determine his progress. And out of the corner of my eye across the room, I'm watching this older gentleman. I say older, about my age. And I've watched him he's been shifting in his seat for about 3 minutes now as this other person has droned on and on. And I just know he's anxious to pipe up. Shoot, I'm anxious to pipe up, but I don't dare because I know I'm not the smartest knife in the drawer. Well, finally, the older gentleman, he blurts out, he just says, personally in my business, I don't much care about anything except sales. If I'm selling stuff, then I know it's working. If I'm not selling stuff, then I know I need to change something. I chuckle, a few people, including me, chuckle, but I'm like this guy. I'm old school, simple, straightforward. Can we stay focused on what really matters? I mean, who cares about all this other stuff? Yeah, measure your brains out. If nobody's buying your stuff, you can shove all those measurements anywhere that you want to, right? Enough said. And there it is. There it is. Another instance of overthinking, sounding smart, but being stupid. Just being flat out stupid. Making something far more complicated than it needs to be. I'm sure somewhere there is a space. There is this this plane of living where brains and sounding smart trump real action. There's bound to be. Well, hey, I'm thinking of you, national politics. I don't operate or live in that world, though. I don't live or operate in that space. In my world, things must get done. Money must be earned. Profits must hit the bottom line. If not, then people lose jobs. Companies are at risk. I mean, the math is pretty simple, and there's no reason to make it harder than it really is. Generate revenues, control costs, make profits, build the road, fix the bridge, paint the house, sell the service, fix the problem, blah, blah, blah. Now, I realize that the execution of these things, it can be complex at times, but why complicate an already complicated problem? Now, here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where I live, road construction is an ongoing, nonstop activity, right? I mean, we've got, 6 million people in the DFW area, and we got more pouring in all the time. I mean, there's just more cars than space for the cars. So by the time one lane gets built, one bridge gets expanded, no sooner is it expanded than, we need another lane because we've still got more cars. I don't pretend to say that traffic management, road construction, is a real simple process. It is complicated. But I just wonder, is it benefited by making it more complicated, or is it benefited by trying to make it simpler. You're not an engineer, perhaps. I know I'm not. But I still know the answer. I just know the answer. We've all heard the best way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time. Keep it simple, straightforward. Most of the problems, not all, but most of the problems facing us in our businesses, in our organizations, are not terribly complicated, are they? Look at yours. Take last week. Take last month. Just pause and think of the most complicated issue that you faced. The very most complicated issue. How complex was it? And how many times do you encounter that kind of a problem versus problems that are infinitely less complicated? No, most of the problems that we face are not terribly complicated. Some may be, but we are all fully capable of making things harder than they need to be. Ah, there's the rub. That's overthinking. And the energy lost, I don't know how you'd calculate it. It would take a bigger brain than the one I've got to figure out a way to calculate all of the energy lost when we overthink it, when we make it more complex than it needs to be. Not to mention the lost time or the lost money. You know what it is? It's staying on point. It's moving along toward the best answer. And that is always, always seems to be more difficult than you might think. Let me illustrate it with something that you can likely easily relate. Have you ever been in a workshop, you know, some sort of training where the instructor opened it up for questions? Well, of course. I mean, most of us have been in those kinds of meetings many, many times. So now it's the Q&A part of the presentation. Is every question pertinent to the subject at hand? Have you ever seen a questioner who wanted the spotlight? It really wasn't about the question. It was just about, I need to ask a question. I need to think of a question to ask. You ever seen somebody like that? Of course, we've all seen people like that. And so they ask something that may have little or nothing to do with the topic at hand. I mean, I don't think I've ever attended any such session where it didn't happen at least once. I mean, there's one in every crowd, right? Your job as a leader is first and foremost to make sure that that person, it ain't you. Second of all, to make sure that that person, whomever they may be, that they don't derail the process to find the best answer. I'll tell you what it's like. This is exactly what it's like, at least to me. And I think about this. If you ever listen to talk radio, especially talk radio where they take phone calls, it's like a talk radio host, and sometimes the host, they just need to hang up. They just need to hang up or quickly dismiss a disruptive caller. That's how you have to be as a leader. Be fearless in your quest to make things as simple as possible, but no simpler than necessary. Maybe you craft a very complex, sophisticated answer. But how effective is it going to be if nobody can understand it? And if even fewer could execute it? Are you a football fan? I mean, as I'm recording, I'm watching some college football and, you know, we've got spread offenses and we've got this and we've got that. But you know what? At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how complex the offensive coordinator is. Doesn't matter how sophisticated the game plan may be. Doesn't matter how clever the play drawn on a whiteboard may be. If the players can't be where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there and execute the play, what good is it? What good is it? I'm thinking of the Dallas Cowboys years ago in the Super Bowl days of the trio, Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, and Emmitt Smith. And it's long been said the opponents knew what they were going to do. Jimmy Johnson to this day says, everybody knew what we were going to do. Didn't matter. We could do it really, really well. And so the challenge was always to the opponent. Yep. This is what we're going to do. Stop it. See if you can't stop it. And of course they couldn't. So many times they just flat couldn't stop it because pretty straightforward. wasn't terribly complex, but boy, could the team execute. I don't know. Maybe there are better illustrations for this whole notion of think, but don't overthink. Sure, be smart. But maybe better said, be wise. Be wise. I rest my case. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website, again, is Higher Human Performance. I would love it if you'd go over there and check things out. You can read all about me, who I serve, what I do. Going to have some big announcements coming up in the future, I hope. Update you on some things happening with me in the professional realm and some new activities that I hope to be engaging in very, very soon. Don't worry. The podcast is going to stay intact. Higher Human Performance is all about leadership. Coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, inside the Yellow Studio. I appreciate you listening. Visit the website. Leave me a 5-star review over on iTunes. It'll help us get heard by more people and found, and that's always a great thing. Just go to the website, higherhumanperformance.com. Over on the right-hand side, you will see the album art for the podcast, and it says leave a 5-star review. Just click that link. Click right there on that graphic, and it'll take you right there, and you can leave us a review. You can send me email. You can communicate with us any number of ways, including the contact form at the website. I'd love to hear your questions, your feedback, your comments. Might turn something into a show in the future days if you care to share any show ideas with me. I wish you and your leadership all the best. Good luck. Safe listening. Keep pushing forward, and I'll see you next time. Thanks.